No one lives his life. No one lives his life. Disguised since childhood, haphazardly assembled from voices and fears and little pleasures, we come of age as masks. Our true face never speaks. Somewhere, there must be storehouses where all these lives are laid away, like suits of armor or old carriages of clothes hanging limply on walls. Maybe all paths lead there to the repository of unlived things. Rilke just slays me. No one lives his life. Disguised since childhood, haphazardly assembled from voices and fears and little pleasures, we come of age as masks. Our true face never speaks. Somewhere there must be storehouses where all these lives are laid away like suits of armor or old carriages of clothes hanging limply on the walls. Maybe all paths lead there to the repository of unlived things. I just remembered a line from Jung. No one will ever give a parenting workshop on what I'm about to say, but he said, the greatest burden a child bears is the unlived life of the parent. Come to my workshop. Nah, I'm not going to do that. Yeah, the greatest burden a child bears is the unlived life of the parent. What does that tell you about the aim of parenting? God. Well, it means you have an unlived life, and you better find it. You better find this repository. Yeah, so that's not what I was going to speak about, though that would be interesting. Today's one of those days when I really didn't want to give a talk. That happens from time to time. And I guess that there's a confluence of reasons why I didn't feel like talking today. One is I wanted to do this Rilke poem, and then the news of the world, you know, collides with Rilke and with my ideas and with the conversation I'd like to have this month about well-being. That's our theme for the month, well-being. And well-being matters. I mean, who would disagree? And it's also a pretty challenging topic, I suppose, to bring up, especially when the world doesn't feel all that well. If we just use a wellness, sickness dynamic. So that's partly why I don't want to say what I'm going to try to say today, because of the news of the world and because of what happened in Texas and not to mention all the other bad news in the world. So why are we going to talk about well-being and what are we going to say about it? And maybe another reason why it's challenging for me to talk today is that I'm just getting back from about a week in Utah at 9,000 feet among the aspens. And I read the headline about what happened in Texas about 5 minutes before I set off into the land of no cell phones, and which is a strange image to carry with you into very wild places, which is where I was with Animas Valley Institute and 13 other people who I might say in one way or another are committed to growing up and committed to service and to taking their own spiritual life seriously and to think deeply about well-being, to offer themselves to the wild world, to pursue well-being and wholeness, we might say, not just for themselves but for future generations. And they're not anomalies. You're like that too. You could have been on this trip. Don't we all want to walk in that direction toward wholeness and well-being? And when I say wholeness, I mean just something larger than the small self, including more and more of the whole, of the wholeness of our own being, to view the world through the lens of increased wholeness. Maybe I'll say more about that word in a few minutes, but I think one of the temptations of wild places is what I might call the illusion of Eden, and or perfection. That's not what I mean by wholeness, by the way. I don't mean perfection. And we live in a world where that the illusion of Eden is still present. Isn't there some kind of utopian state that we can get to? Like, if it's not 9,000 feet in an aspen grove, maybe it's 12,000 feet. Maybe it's, 12,000 feet would be the tree line, so not an aspen grove. But if I could just get higher or more remote, then maybe I would taste the paradise of Eden. And that's what's funny about the Genesis story. It's like, God, Yahweh, puts an angel with a flaming sword at the mouth of Eden. It says, you can't go back. Tough. There is no going back. And that's part of the starkness of being, back to the title. Yeah, we are east of Eden. Have you ever read John Steinbeck's novel? I decided I was going to start reading the classics. I just read the first chapter or two. I've also decided to read Ulysses, and I'm on round four. I'm not exaggerating, trying to read Ulysses, and I still am not even halfway through. And each time I think, I'm just going to start again. Yeah, so. In the opening chapter or two, there's this brutal scene where a brother beats his own brother to an inch of his life. Yeah, east of Eden, it's like that. And there's an angel with a flaming sword saying, deal with it. Deal with the stark nature of being and the reality of being human. And the funny thing about being in this aspen grove is that just in case I was thinking I'm going to escape the world, it was bear hunting season. There aren't that many bears in this part of Utah in the first place. And I'm not against hunting. I'm really not. I've done my fair share of hunting, and in some ways, humans have caused such a mess in the natural ebb and flow of the way the natural environment takes care of itself that in some ways you could think about it as an ethical obligation with certain animals at least. That's one argument. Not that we want to discuss that right now, but bear hunting season in Utah, where they only, I think, give out maybe 7 permits, so it's pretty small, but they're hunting with dogs. And hunting with dogs is as old as humanity. As written humanity, the relationship between the dog and the hunter is very ancient. That's why you love dogs. You're like, oh, I just love my dog. No, because deep inside you is a hunter. You don't believe me? Well, that's okay. You don't need to believe it. It's true. We evolved together, actually, to do this very thing. So it was like kind of magnificent to see the human canine conversation. Even though I wanted the bears to win, you know? And you're going to see how devious I am in a second. I was walking, I was out on a wander one day, and I saw a bear, like a game camera. I was like, oh, all right, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to take it down, right? And I went up to it. Yeah, this is called vandalism, in case you're wondering. And I went up to it, and I just changed my mind. I was like, you know what? This is the way the world is. This is east of Eden. And on the way down the mountain, I'm not exaggerating, 6 days later, there was a Toyota pickup truck coming the other way. And he rolled down the window and he said, you, I saw you on my game camera. I was like, good thing I didn't vandalize it. Yeah, so it, you know, and where we were, by the way, I was with a guide friend of mine, and she's been going to this spot for like 20 years. And she can see in a way that I can't the effects of really almost a 75-year drought that's just been slowly drying up the West. And And in the last 20 years, you know, the flowers are smaller and the trees are more stunted. And it's also on land that's managed by the Bureau of Land Management, government agency. And they allow free-range cow grazing in much of the West, in much of the public land in the West. And so you're also dealing with that. So, all right, you're at 9,000 feet in an aspen grove where there are bear and cougar. I woke up in the morning and saw a nice cougar print not too far from my tent. So, and there are also cow patties everywhere, and the grass is, you know, not what it could be, and the water sources are being used for cattle. And so, east of Eden, do you get my point? The stark nature of being, and there's not like the separate world that I get to go to on special retreats and then everything else. It's one world. That's partly what I mean by wholeness. We must learn to bear the burden of things like Texas happening. We can say this is not our country, and that's just an illusion. That's Eden. This is the world that we have co-created, and it's terrible. It's also and I think part of the terrible burden is what we're asked to step toward. You've heard me go on and on about the apocalypse in the past. And I think we're living in an apocalyptic age, and I don't mean by bottled water. I mean it in the classic mythic sense. And that is, we live in a time that's revealing itself. That's all apocalypse means. It's revealing, like, here's what your values are. Here's what you're about. Here's how your values collide into one another. Here are the consequences of your actions. Here are the consequences of the actions of your forefathers and foremothers. We live in the wake of these things. It's apocalyptic. It's revealing. Just in case you thought you could live in your own bubble of ideology, that bubble is constantly being burst. That's what an apocalypse is. It's like, pay attention. And one of the things I really value about this community is that regularly we look at things that are hard and challenging. We don't say, you know, we could just pat each other on the back all the time and say, look how great you are, you know. No, but we want to even do some self-examination. And it's partly what I mean by wholeness. Including more and more, even our own contradictions and our own complex nature. So what's my point? Point number one is nothing is pure. That's what I want to say. Nothing is pure. You can't even go anywhere anymore without the impurities being present. And where you go, where are you going to go in your psyche that's pure? You know, you don't believe me? Well, we can work on your dreams for about a month and then you'll change your mind. You know, nothing is pure. There's not an Eden in your psyche either. We're complex and we have complex problems. And I'm just saying, I think to be an adult, much more an elder, which I'd like to one day aspire to, requires something of just facing up to these things and being a contributing member to the complex conversations that need to take place. One of the things that has been bouncing around for me has to do with the word sacrifice. And it took about 30 seconds, I'm assuming much of it I was gone for, but it probably took about 30 seconds for the mainstream media sources to take something, what amounts to a horrible tragedy, and spin it into a kind of ideological warfare. I mean, really, like, just instantly. Let's draw our lines, and now we know on either side that we're right. And I used to be attracted to a word like compromise, but no one's really attracted to that word anymore. Like, it's become a bad thing, even though we know we have to do it. I'm going to make it worse by using a word like sacrifice. Like, Just ask yourself, what are you willing to sacrifice to have a world that's safer or more well-being or increased wholeness for greater numbers of people? What are you willing to sacrifice? I don't know. I don't know. That's partly why I don't want to give this talk, because I don't really want to sacrifice that much. If I'm honest, I expect other people to sacrifice and compromise. And we have the same place that we're in right now. When I was a pastor at Mars Hill, I was a pastor when the Sandy Hook tragedy happened. And it was like leveling and sort of unimaginable. And one part of me wanted to believe this will never happen again. You know. And what's happened between now and then when it comes to making changes to make the world safer? What's happened? You have to ask yourself that. What's happened? Not much, really. Not much. Some small things. Some small things that individual schools or school districts have tried to do. I was a school teacher for many years, and when I was a little kid, by the way, maybe some of you experienced this, we had to do nuclear fallout drills. Did you ever have to do those? Where you hide under your desk. That was like, that's the funniest thing. It's a nuclear bomb. I know. Hide under the desk. It tells you how much, you know, how present fears are. And now we have other kinds of drills. We have mass shooting drills. And you think, how did we get here, you know? And and instead of even the smallest changes happening, not much has happened. It's like, why pick up trash on the side of the road, which you do at C3 each year? Why? You're just filling landfills. Just leave it, you know. That's what we're going to do next year. We're going to walk on the highway and throw trash. Just toss it down, you know. Yeah, why do that? Because something is better than nothing. That's why. But for some reason, the United States in particular, in my view, I'm going to use some psychological language here, is in a kind of psychological possession on either side, this grip that leads to a kind of terrible stagnation. And a word like sacrifice is just gone. That's an old world. No one would do that anymore. No one would do unto others as you would have them do unto you. No. Do unto me as I, you know, I can't even think of the alternative. I want what I want. Tough shit, you know. And I'm not just picking on one side. I'm saying the ideological possession, you know. And it has terrible consequences. Like, where do you stand with sacrifice? And one of the things, like, you might wonder, what does this Rilke poem have to do with what I'm talking about? And the short answer is, I'm not sure, really. But I would like you to listen to the beginning again. No one lives his life. No one lives his life. Disguised since childhood, haphazardly assembled. Isn't that your life, haphazardly assembled? Just before you came into the world, you didn't think to yourself, you know, I'd like to be born into this kind of family with these kind of values, and I'd like this kind of sibling, and, you know, haphazardly. You are an accident. Even though I'm thinking of David White, you are not an accident among accidents. In this case, we'll beg to differ. Haphazardly assembled from voices and fears and little pleasures. Little pleasures. The tiniest pleasure, which is like a vapor in the wind, you know. We come of age as masks. And Rilke is playing with the word persona here. That's the Latin word for mask. The actor's persona. You've seen those faces? They still hang around in the theater department, you know, that kind of thing. That's a persona. It's a mask. It's not that it's unimportant. We have masks. You have masks. I have a mask. Right now I'm wearing the mask of public speaking, I guess. But it's a mask, it's a persona, it's haphazardly assembled, and it's full of fears and little pleasures and voices. And what Rilke is saying here is there's something beneath that. That's partly what I mean by wholeness. There's something beneath the mask. Even the person on the other side of the ideological aisle from you that's saying things that you can't fathom, they too have a mask on. That's partly what I'm saying. It's a mask. There is a wild mystery underneath there. There is a storehouse underneath there. Now, these are my convictions. You can say, you can disagree with me. But when I say a word like, when I say I value inclusion, I don't just mean various kinds of groups, personally. Like, and plus, the groups are getting more complicated. It's like, and the categories are getting more divided. And so it's starting to seem like I don't know what's going on anymore. When I say I value inclusion, what I value is the human being behind the mask. That's what I value. The wild mystery that they are to themselves and they are to me. How many of you, let's actually do a show of hands, have been in some kind of long-term relationship? Okay. Now, with all your vast experience in long-term relationships, isn't it also true that sometimes you look at the person and say, I don't know this person? Yeah. And guess what? They look at you and say, I don't know this person. And you know what? It's true. It's true. It's like, well, this is not the person I married. Never was. You know? Seriously. That requires a certain kind of humility. I think we actually, we're living in an age of spiritual crisis. I don't know what else to call it. I say spiritual because I can't think of a better word. It's like, because when I say spiritual, I mean our values, our relationship with something larger, a larger story, like a larger sense of connection, a sense of transcendence to something larger. It's like a spiritual crisis. We don't have that. We're hungry for that, but we don't have that. And when we look out at the landscape, we just see ideologies and fears and masks and little pleasures. I'm going to fight for my right for the tiniest pleasure. That's a small world. You know, but it's also a mask. And I think Rilke's saying, trust me, there's a storehouse there. So we have to take some responsibility to begin to take off our own masks. And that's one of the things I really like about C3. We do occasionally try to look in the mirror and say, have I gotten things wrong? Am I so pure? You know? Let's just play with the word inclusion. We're all about inclusion, except the people we don't really want to include in our inclusion, you know. Certain things we want to. And so, okay, that just means you're complex. You're a wild mystery. You're a whole ecosystem, to use Wayne's metaphor from earlier in our pre-talk thing. You're an ecosystem. And we live in a culture of homogeny. Like, we don't want an ecosystem. We want underground sprinkling and no dandelions. Damn dandelions, they're so yellow, you know? They're so problematic, you know? It's silliness. No, you are an ecosystem. Your psyche is an ecosystem, and there are elements of your own ecosystem that you haven't even explored. There are probably sustaining elements of your own ecosystem that you know nothing about. Not to mention the ecosystem of a culture, for that matter. God, talk about complex. We can't go back. You know, make America great again. I understand the sentiment. I really do. God, I want to go back to the 90s. When music, you know, when you didn't have a click track. And, you know, you had analog record. You had to be good at your instrument to get on a record. Give me the good old days. But, you know, Bieber's making all the money. So actually, he's pretty good. Anyway. I'm saying you can't go back. I'm saying you can't go back. You can't go back to Eden. You can't go back. And the sentiment is an illusion. And we're being called, I think, to face some very challenging things. And what's it going to feel like? It's going to feel like picking up trash. It's not going to feel all that important. there's not going to be some grand legislation that's going to fix all this. I'm not saying don't work for a grand legislation. I'm saying most of it is picking up trash. It's really small things. It's really small things. It's like, I don't know if you, you know, I was just thinking about lead paint in the 70s. You know what they didn't do is ban paint. That would have been a solution. Let's ban paint. Well, they banned lead in paint. Who led that, do you know? Moms. 100%. You think it was some multinational corporation? You think it was the United States government? Moms. Picking up trash. Saying, my kid is sick. Now, it ended up having, you know, kind of a sweeping effect, and it's you can't find paint with lead in it. All right. So pick up trash. You want to see change? You just got to find some trash to pick up. That's partly what I'm saying. I don't want you to lose heart. I want you to feel this morning, I'm trying to feel, the stark nature of being human. We are both evil and good. I really believe that. You can disagree and say, oh, we're mostly good, and other people say, we're all evil, and I just say, it seems like the verdict's in, we're a mixture. It's the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov, to quote the rabbis. That's the inclination to do evil and the inclination to do good, and there they wrestle in your psyche. That's Cain and Abel. That's the brothers at East of Eden in the opening chapter beating themselves to within an inch of their life. Yeah, okay, there they are, inclination. And guess what? You have tremendous capacity to do good. And a lot of society and culture gets along quite fine. I drove here and no one ran me off the road. Okay, well, that's something, you know? So I want you to feel the stark nature of being, and also not hopelessness, but the reality of things require some picking up trash. I don't know why I'm on this metaphor. It occurred to me while I was speaking. I was like, I'm sticking with it. And I think to begin with, we must know we're wearing masks. Back to Rilke. You and I are wearing masks. And it's a great act of courage just to examine them. And to try to go up beneath the surface to where the storehouses lie. Okay. All right, so now I'm going to get to five things and I'm done. If I get to all five. We're going to begin a month of talking about well-being. And this was my attempt to just start the conversation. And I want to say five very obvious things based on my talk. Here's number one. Human nature is complex. Right? So I just wanted to say that. Human nature is complex. We have the profound capacity for good and evil. We are both wild animals and conscious beings. You can love. I don't even know what love is, do you? I have no idea. But it's something. And we're conscious of it. And you're also just a freaking animal. It was funny when I was, this is way too much information, but when you're at 9,000 feet, there are no bathrooms. I'm like, I'm just an animal. You know, I'm like digging a hole. I'm like a cat, you know? I'm just an animal. This is what my ancestors did for 2 million years. Dug little holes, you know, if that. Yeah, we're just animals. And so anyway, human nature is complex. And I think anything that helps remind us of that is a step in the right direction. And with that, you have to also say, here's an addendum, every issue that is important to a human culture that flourishes is going to be complex. If human nature is complex, every issue is that complex. So let's wade in. That's all I'm saying. Here's my second point. Our culture is also sick. It's pretty sick. And I don't know how we got here, but how do we address sickness? And in the most general sense, without going into too much detail, this is why I like a word like wholeness. It's like all things matter. Right now, we live, this is a bit of a soapbox or whatever this thing is. I guess I'll stand up for a second. We live in a symptom elimination culture. That's not a culture of wellness, and that's not a culture of wholeness. Symptom elimination. And we think that's wellness. How do you know this? watch television. The entire thing is funded by symptom elimination culture. The everything on television at this point. Not feeling well? Here's a drug to eliminate the symptom. Now, by the way, it's going to give you 75 other side effects, but that's symptom elimination. That's not a question of wholeness. Question of wholeness is, takes into consideration the whole being. You know, our kids are suffering. Our kids are suffering. That's what, you know, the Texas massacre reveals that to us. Our children are suffering. And that requires a conversation about wholeness, not just symptom elimination, not eliminating one problem or two problems. There's a whole culture here at work. Did you know the highest rates of suicide in the United States of America are among young girls 13 and 14? That's new. That hasn't been, it's always been this way. What can we do? That's new. That requires a conversation around wholeness. Okay, so our psychological and spiritual well-being is suffering. That's not just a question of what laws need to get passed. Really. And is that complex? That's complex. That's all I'm saying. It's complex. And okay. I have three other points I'm not going to share because I feel like that's the place to land. Listen again to Rilke. No one lives his life. No one. Disguised since childhood, haphazardly assembled from voices and fears and little pleasures. We come of age as masks, but we don't have to stay there, you sort of say. We don't have to stay. We come of age as masks. And the choice of something like cling to your mask the rest of your life, put that on your tombstone. I never changed, you know. I did it my way, you know. I never looked at what I needed to look at. That would be a funny tombstone. I never paid attention to the important things. I wore a mask. You're welcome, you know. I could go on and on. These are. Now thinking of, I need to start a business making these tombstones. Okay, our true face never speaks. Somewhere there must be storehouses where all these lives are laid away like suits of armor or old carriages of clothes hanging limply on the walls. Maybe all paths lead there, even tragedies. Maybe all paths lead there to the repository of unlived things. Thanks for listening.